What do Davante Adams, George Kittle, Justin Jefferson, Deebo Samuel, and Amon-Ra St. Brown all have in common? Well, besides being some of the most reliable hands in the game of football, they're also the stars of the new Netflix series, Receiver. From the same team that brought you the show Quarterback, Receiver takes you deep inside the huddles, locker rooms, and personal lives of five of the best pass catchers and playmakers in the NFL. Catch Receiver on July 10th, only on Netflix.
From Tally to Cali,
it's time
to wake up!
Wake up! Wake up!
WarChant.com is your ultimate seminal sports source.
And this is Wake Up War Chant, presented by
the vitamins.
Now here's WarChant.com's Aslan Hudjavandi
and Corey Clark. Wake up! It's Wake Up War Chant, presented by Vitamin Energy. Coming up on today's show, for the 24th time, Florida State going to Omaha. Will it be different at the College World Series for the Noles? And Michael Langston talks recruiting, tries to convince me that Florida State's going to go into Alabama and get one of the best pass rushers in the country. Let's see if it works out. Wake Up War Chant, presented by Vitamin Energy. VitaminEnergy.com. Promo code WarChant BOGO. WarChant B-O-G-O. Buy one, get one free. Not 25% off, not 50% off. Buy one, get one free, everybody. WarChant BOGO, the promo code. World's first clinically tested, clinically proven energy shot, 260 milligrams, all natural caffeine, no sugar, but vitamins and nutrients. It's awesome. One bottle, not even 2 ounces. Delicious, energizing, all you could want, vitaminenergy.com. WarChant.com, your ultimate seminal sports source. Some would say all you could ever want for Florida State coverage. Go check it out. FSU won, everybody. Try it. Keep trying it. Pretty sure it's still working. 2 months. One American dollar. 2 months, one American dollar, full premium access, warchant.com, and you can hop onto the On3 message boards. You can check out the Florida board, the Miami board, Ohio State. Get ready for Big Ten times when we're rivals and just see how lousy of people they are. You can do all that. And you can also read Corey's stuff that's behind the paywall. Corey Clark joining us from Parts Unknown, much like the Ultimate Warrior. How are you, friend?
I'm good, buddy, and parts are known. I'm in Biloxi, Mississippi. Beautiful Biloxi, especially this time of year. Mm. I'm here for a couple days, and I just won a lot of money, which never happens, so I'm pretty excited.
Nice. Noel's going to Omaha. Corey up big. He's also, I don't know, I don't have my phone in front of me. It's charging, but I will brag on America's favorite nephew, Brady Clark. What do you go, four for five for six on Saturday afternoon against the team?
He went 3 for 4, but okay. He had 5 RBIs, which I don't remember he's ever done that before. But then on Sunday, he went 0 for 3.
It doesn't matter. Right. Why, Dad?
Sorry.
Why?
That's how I am. That's how I don't want I don't want to be one of those parents that only points out the positive and not the negative. I don't want people to think that I think my son's a superstar.
Well, can we just celebrate him for more than 2.9 seconds?
Right. I apologize. Brady, 3 for 4, a double, 5 RBIs, couple runs scored, stolen base. Really good game for him.
Was this like for Shanna? Just like, oh, dinner was good. Now clean up, please. Do the dishes.
Yeah, done.
Get it out of my way.
Hey,
I'm done.
I don't want him to get a big head. I want him to understand that. Hey, you got to produce the next day too.
All right. Well, Florida State certainly did as much. Hosting UConn in a super regional this past weekend, Florida State absolutely decimated, rocked the Huskies 24-4, highest scoring super regional or most amount of runs by one team, I should say, in a super regional game. Florida State holds that designation. NC State tried to flirt with it later in the weekend, but they were not able to. This sets the stage for a Saturday scan the ticket to Omaha game. Corey, that Florida State is able to eke out in extra innings, 12 innings to be exact. Everybody obviously knows the result, but I want to go to this point in the game. Florida State is up 6-4 in the sixth inning. Group text says Jamie Arnold's had enough after the fifth inning. Jamie Arnold, can't really say he gave you what you wanted. Can you?
No.
Love the kid. I mean, he's an ace. He's still the dude. But you're hoping for maybe a little bit more. He comes out there to start the sixth inning and then promptly shows that Corey was right and I was wrong and they probably should not have let him go out there in the sixth inning. At this point, Corey, UConn has a very heavy righty lineup. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, just go for it now. Bring in Connor Whitaker. You're up by 2 runs. You need what? 6, 7, 8, 9. So you need what? 12 more outs?
I think you needed 11 more outs because Jamie had gotten you 1 in the sixth. So you needed 11 more outs, yeah.
I'm like this. I'm fine with this. Let's bring in Connor. This seems to be like his absolutely tailor-made sort of situation, and they proceed not to. They bring in Brennan Oxford. Oxford gets roughed up to the tune of a bases clearing double that brought this game back into hanging in the balance. Later on in the game, they bring on Connor Holtz, who we like here on the program, but again, another left-handed arm. He allows a game-tying home run that goes off the light pole. I don't know if it actually would have hit off the light pole if the fence was 30 feet, but I digress. And then this game, I guess you can say what, Corey, once the ninth inning started, it kind of became, or actually the 10th inning, right? Because that's when they brought Whitaker in, because they brought in...
They brought him in the bottom of the ninth with a runner at second.
That's right, because Joe Charles
came in. The
winning
run at second with one out, yeah.
Joe Charles came in. Joe Charles was not built for that moment. Hopefully Omaha treats him a little bit better.
He got out of a bases-loaded jam. Now, he was part of the creation of that jam, right. But he got the kid to fly to right to get out of the jam in the... That would have been the eighth inning, yeah. So he got out of that. It was Holtz that came in and gave up the tying home run.
Went out of order on that. I apologize. So at this point, though, when you... that I was stunned. Like 30 minutes prior, I'm like, bring in Connor Whitaker. Then when it's the ninth inning, I'm like, what is he doing? Explain to me what you think he was doing that ultimately worked out.
Well, the one, and look, we need to celebrate Link because this is incredible what he's done.
For sure.
This turnaround has been great. He's very good at what he does. It was a little peculiar that if you were willing to pitch Whitaker in the ninth, why wouldn't he have just started the inning? Why have Holtz come in at all? And I know you could look at it and say it was two lefties in the lineup, but it's like, all right, but you knew they were going to pinch hit that big fat kid.
Sorry,
the chubby kid. He had 18 hits on the year, but 8 were home runs, and he's a righty. So when you bring in a lefty curveball specialist and he's pinch hitting for a kid that's 0-for-4 with 4 strikeouts, that lefty's not going to face you. So it's either, do you want Connor Whitaker pitching to a lefty that's 0-for-4, or do you want, Connor Holtz pitching to this big kid that when he hits the ball, hits it out of the yard. And that's hindsight. I get it. He had a 2-strike count on the kid. But odd decision. But in hindsight, obviously a great decision. And we don't need to get in the weeds too much on the baseball decisions itself, but more just generalities on what a great season this is and what a great accomplishment that is. Because, man, Connor Whitaker, dude, it was James Tibbs' game. It'll always be known as the Tibbs game. But I hope Whitaker's always, an asterisk there, because that was a remarkable performance from a guy that hadn't been healthy, that was just ramping back up. He fought his way back. He's clearly – he's not 100% still, but he fought his way back to get back into the on the mound for his team. And then he goes up and gets – I think he got 11 outs, 12 outs. Kept him in the game in the 9th, 10th, and 11th, and then saved it in the 12th. And we weren't sure he was going to pitch again. So for him to come back when he was out for 2 months and get the most important outs of the season, it was really cool. A veteran guy that had lived through some awful seasons and has been a starter and reliever and everything in between, which I guess isn't much. But he's been kind of a closer-type guy. He's been a setup guy. He's been a starter. For him to come in and get those outs – says a lot about him, and it also says a lot about Link. Like, he was going for it.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what they would have done on Sunday if Connor Whitaker had gone in, let's say the 12th inning and given up a 3-run homer, and they walk it off, and he's thrown 50 pitches. I don't know what you do on Sunday, man. But Link went for it in that moment, which credit to him, man.
Yeah, I feel like at that moment when they brought in Connor Whitaker, they're like, all right, game 3 has started. Because you kind of brought... They brought Afton in. I think Brady Afton. I know his first name, but I know Afton. Like he was definitely going to be their Sunday starter, UConn. So they brought him on. You brought Connor Whitaker on. Both guys come on the ninth inning. It is now a tie game. Game 3, for all intents and purposes, is now started. And you feel like, all right, Connor Whitaker is probably in a home crowd, home situation, being used to the heat, which we'll probably talk about that at some point later on this program. Like at that point, you're at a good spot, because I think. 1-2, the top of the line might have also been due up for Florida State if they were able to get out of that ninth inning going into the 10th inning. So not second-guessing anything now, obviously. In hindsight, I kind of was. But now it made total sense looking back on it, because it's, all right, we have a 2-run lead. Oxford's been good for us this postseason.
Yeah. Oxford's been good all year.
Yeah, let's keep
Whitaker
up our sleeve for Sunday if we get to that situation.
Yep.
Then you get to a point where it's like, well, hey, man, Sunday's right now. Let's just go ahead and get this done now. Because I think, yeah, you probably go, what, like John Abraham, Andrew Armstrong, Johnny Allstaff on Sunday, but UConn would have been in the same position. It works out great. Florida State wins 10-8 because James Tipp, all he does is hit two-run homers, and Florida State's off to Omaha now for the 24th time, and after the only losing season in the entire program's history in year one of Link Jarrett's era here at Tallahassee. It's absolutely incredible, Corey. You know, I mentioned, like, I want to make it to a Super. I don't care. Just make it to a Super. That was me being completely irrational. To think they can make it to Omaha is beyond my wildest dreams. And the fact of the matter is, as we sit here and talk right now, we still don't know if it's going to be Tennessee or Evanston, everybody. They had a rain delay, start a little bit late.
Evansville. He knows it's Evansville, everyone.
Sorry, Purple Aces. Much respect. For real, much respect. Florida State has just as good a chance as anybody to go out to Omaha and mess around and win enough games to get a national title. And that's incredible to say. A year from where we were.
Yeah, man, it is. And I hope that's what people understand and celebrate, no matter what happens in Omaha. Like, good, go win it. There's been worse teams than Florida State that have won it. Mm. There's been a worse FSU that won it. And that was 16 years ago when Fresno State was a 4 seed in a regional and then went. I mean, they had loaded, soon to be illegal bats, but they still went out and won it. I remember watching the game. Was it game one? They were playing Georgia in the championship series when Brady was 2 days old in the hospital.
Aww.
I had to take him back for jaundice. So I had to sit with him that night so Shannon could get some real sleep. So I was in the hospital room with him that night. That was not a great night. He did not like being under that light. He couldn't be like bundled up. So he was crying because he was cold. It was awful. Aww. But I watched the FSU Georgia game. And it was also the same night that I texted my buddy.
The other FSU.
The Fresno State, yeah. And I texted my buddy that same night and said, hey, they're doing Who Wants to Be a Millionaire movie auditions tomorrow at 9 a.m. at this mall near your house, man. I saw it online. He was asleep. I'm like, I called him 5 times and I left him voicemails and I text him. I'm like, dude, when you wake up, you need to quit. You need to not go to work and you need to go to these auditions and see if you can get on the show. And he did, and he won $250,000.
Look at that.
All that happened around Fresno State. Fresno State beating Georgia. So, but yeah, so Coastal Carolina's won it. Fresno State's won it. Like, there have been worse teams than this Florida State team. They obviously have some deficiencies. They have two guys in the bullpen now, if Whitaker counts, that you really depend on, right? Like, that was the thing. Like, I didn't like bringing Arnold out only because he was at like 100 and something pitches, like 108. He ended up throwing 121. But it's not like Jamie Arnold on pitch 118. You have some surefire better options in the bullpen.
Right.
You just, because of injuries and some stuff, you just don't have a lot of great options in the bullpen. That is a weakness. It's been a weakness all season. It'll be a weakness in Omaha. But, man, what a fun team. What a fun season. Mm-hmm. James Tibbs, it's so cool he got that moment. Mm. It's just so cool. I was thinking about that. Like, Buster Posey got a moment like that. Buster Posey hit the – in the game 3 of the Supers against Wichita State, hit like the game-sealing home run off the scoreboard in his last at-bat at Hauser. J.D. Drew didn't get a moment like that. I think D.J. Stewart hit a couple home runs in his final – in winning a regional at Hauser, in his final games at Hauser. But not a lot of the all-time greats have a moment like that that will always be remembered. J.D. Drew didn't. He lost in his last game at Hauser. So for James Tibbs to get a moment like that, man, it's just really cool because he is one of the all-time greats. There's no denying it. And how about my man going 0-for-9 in the regionals and then doing what he did in the Supers?
Yep.
That's just all-time great stuff. It'll always be remembered, and that was really cool to watch. And I know it was hot as Hades at Hauser, but, man, the crowd was great, and he got such – that's so cool for him in his final game at Hauser, we assume – to have a moment like that and to have a crowd like that behind him, supporting him, was really neat.
What would Cam Smith have done if he would have hit the home run? Would he have just picked up every single base and thrown it at the nearest UConn player when he was rounding
him? I think the game would still be going, so we couldn't do the show because he'd just now be walking past third base. That guy, look, man, that's the beauty of this team. It's also, like we've talked about it, it's going to ruffle some feathers. It's just got, like Cam Smith barked at the pitcher. He stared down the pitcher when the pitcher threw a breaking ball in the dirt.
I mean, I've never seen a pitch land that shy of home plate before.
Yeah, and that's what Cam's point was. He smiled and stared him down like, yeah, you knew not to throw that in the strike zone. You're scared to pitch to me.
Yeah.
But then, of course, the pitcher, I would want Brady, if he was pitching, to say something back. Don't just sit there and take that.
Take your base, man.
It's fine to stare it down like they do that, but then also expect that a lot of competitors aren't going to just be like sheepish when you stare them down and smile. They're going to have something to say back. So Florida State draws that out of teams. But, man, I don't know how much that has to do with their success, but they play with such a chip. And we talked to Marco about it last week. They play with such a chip and such a fire and such a passion where it's like they almost have to back it up. And it works for them. Maybe it doesn't work for them next year. Maybe this is a unique group, a collection of guys. But they back it up, man. They stare down their home runs. They stare down pitchers. They shake their heads in disgust when they strike you out as pitchers. But, man, they back it up, and they're going to Nebraska. And only seven other teams are doing that.
Tip of the cap to Jackson West as well. The much maligned, in my opinions that I've thrown here on the program, been critical about the position overall at catcher and what they're getting out of it from the plate. And for him to be the guy that, gives them a little bit of a lifeline there in the ninth inning as well. Or was it the eighth inning when he hit his home run?
It was the eighth inning he hit the home run. That's a huge hit, man. They don't go to extras if he doesn't hit that solo home run. And, he hit it 339 feet. He took advantage of the park, but he had one home run all season. He played in that park all year. So that's another guy stepping up when you absolutely need him to. That's a tough lefty, too. That same guy struck out Tibbs. And so for him to turn on it, get a barrel on it, enough of a barrel on it to get it over that short screen, good for him, man. Local kid, that means a lot to him.
I guess should we go back not to the fact that we're even here and how ridiculous this is? I mean, is this on par with it if Mike would have gone from what happened in 2020 and just instantly fast-forwarded to 2023?
I think it's more like 2021 to 23. But you know what? I don't know though, man. Like it's hard to remember.
They were rough last year, Corey. I mean, we started tuning out baseball in April,
and they were again, folks. They went 2-22 during a 24 game stretch. 2-22, and not a lot of those guys, but some really important pieces on that team, like Whitaker, like Tibbs, like Ferrer, like Cam Smith. They lived through that. They were a part of that. Jamie Arnold,
Oxford.
Yeah, so those six guys are huge parts of this success, and they were part of not just the worst team in Florida State baseball history. That was one of the worst stretches an ACC baseball team has ever had, period, any of them. Like, that was Boston College-esque, man. That was Pitt-esque. 2-22 in a 24-game stretch is preposterously bad. It's unbelievably bad, and they lived through it. And so for them to live through that and then come back in the fall – and think, man, we might be really good. Like, you get used to losing. That's what I talked about way back when in 2020 and 2021. Is like, you don't want the culture to be used to this. Don't get used to losing. Yeah. Don't accept this. And they didn't. Like, I think they got used to the losing last year, but they didn't accept it. And they didn't just throw up their hands and be like, all right, I hope maybe we can sneak into the NCAA tournament next year. No, they went out and won their first 19 games. A year after having the worst season any of us have ever seen. And so, yeah, they do deserve credit. Those players deserve credit. Obviously, the coaching staff brought in 26 new guys, some really key parts, key components. But those guys I mentioned, Jamie Arnold's your best pitcher. Brent Oxford's your best reliever. Probably your three best hitters are Ferrer, Cam Smith, and Tibbs.
Mm-hmm.
You throw Marco in there, but those three are the core. That's the key. They all lived through it last year, and they all came. This was not a completely new team. This was like Jordan Travis living through 20 and 21 and then coming out the other side and winning 19 games in a row. It's not to that scale because baseball isn't as important as football. But it would be like, honestly, if the basketball team this year had reached the Final Four after what happened last year. And they came really close, Aslan. They came really close. A couple threes here and there. By the way, before we forget, we do need to mention it. Jabir Watkins is back.
He's back.
That's big news. That's great news. Don't know how it happened. Don't know any of the machinations behind the scenes. But you do have coming back one of the best players in the ACC. So you have a fighting chance at something. Maybe
yeah.
maybe they they told him, look, you're going to play 38 minutes as long as you stay out of foul trouble, and you can shoot every time. You can go break George McLeod's scoring record if you want. Please come back. But whatever it took, he came back. So now you're not going to be an abject failure like we thought you were going to be when you had no players. So you got your best player back. That's a big deal.
For whatever reason, I can't remember being too anxious watching really a lot of football games since I've been working this job. I just, for whatever reason, I guess football is just easier for me to try to pretend I'm some sort of professional. I need to be objective. And I'm no longer a fan. I need to check all that before I get into the stadium. But with baseball, there's still part of it in me because I just think, like, getting it, just winning one, like, just to win one would be so incredible, I feel like. Because I just remember being a student, going to some of these games with my friends, talking about it even after we graduated. And then when some of the things started happening on Saturday, now they absolutely blew the doors off UConn. It was like 24-4. I'm talking in the group text about when should we go to Omaha? Corey, when are you going to leave? Are you taking Brady with you? I'm probably going to fly. I'm making all the plans. And then Saturday starts kind of slowly unfolding. You see the errors start rearing their, I mean, out of nowhere almost. Like, it almost seemed like Drew Ferreau was going to develop the yips that day. Before his error, I think the last out of the inning before he had his error, his throw to Daniel Cantu was almost wide of the bag. But thankfully, Cantu's like 6'4", and he was able to put the squeeze on it. But Lodis has a bad error. I think that was in the first inning that led to some runs.
Yes, almost first hit of the game. The pesky leadoff hitter that fouled off like 7 pitches in a row, Jamie finally got him to ground out, and then Lodis boots it, and you're like, okay, here you go.
Yeah.
And then 2 batters later, the kid hits a pop-up on a double steal that could that would have been a triple play, literally would have been a triple play if it had been hit 2 feet shorter. But instead it lands in the outfield and they end up scoring. That's baseball. It's so goofy. It's such a goofy sport.
But, you know, later on, Ferreau has an error. Later on, Cam Smith bobbles a ball. And I mean, I think they could have probably had like a 5-4-3 double play, but ends up just getting the lead runner out. And I just start thinking the worst. And I'm like, you know, to say that your team is cursed or your school is cursed, you have to kind of put yourself in a weird spot to think that those kind of things exist. But you see these things happen. You're like, yeah, man, like there's a reason why they had this great coach that won 2,000 games or for whatever reason cannot get over the hump at some point. But I believe, and I don't know, fairly or unfairly, man, we talk about the energy and the passion this team has. I think when you have that dude as your skipper in that dugout, no one's going to freak out. You know, no one's going to panic.
Right.
There's going to be no tightness. And I this is such Monday morning quarterback, or I don't know why I didn't put this in when I tacked on to Friday's podcast, Corey, but I went out to practice on Thursday. And, dude, they were so loose. Not, like, arrogant, not taking anything for granted, but they were so loose and just, like, Link is cracking jokes every single time they're hitting fly balls out. Everybody's yelling, my ball, my ball, my ball. I mean, just everyone's focused. They're dialing, but they're having fun. It was loose. I've been to previous Florida State practices at this time of the year, and there was a tension, man. There was a quiet almost. And you're like, all right, well, they're just focused and dialed in. But I think so many times there was the expectations, the pressure got the better of so many talented teams at this school, man. And it felt like it was maybe going to start happening on Saturday. But I think that dude that you went and pulled away from South Bend, Indiana, that's born and raised in the city, man, they're just, he's got something. And for whatever reason, like, I go from thinking they're cursed to I'm absolutely going into Omaha thinking the Florida State has every chance to win the national title. And there's, everyone's got warts, Corey, right? I mean, Tennessee's going to a game 3 against Evansville. We saw NC State and Georgia going to go to a game 3. It's wide open, man, and they've got this guy, and they've got this lineup, and they've got 2 good starters, and we think probably a nice stopper to come in behind that. Feels really good, man. Feels incredible, actually.
Yeah, I would say this, though, that, like, when you talk about this baseball program being cursed, it ain't in Hauser, and it's not in regional play and super regional play. That curse that we all know about and think about or believe in, That happens in Nebraska. So let's see how it works out there. But that's to say, I don't disagree with anything you said. Number one, it's harder and harder. It's as hard as it's ever been to get to Omaha. It's absolutely is. Evansville's a number 4 seed. We don't know how the game turned out. They might have lost 20-6. But they took the number 1 overall seed to a 3rd game in their home park. Like, it's just hard to win in college baseball.
And blasted them on Saturday. Like, came back and, like, rallied. It wasn't like any kind of
Well, it was
stuff.
10-8, but yes, it was they put 10 runs on the number 1 overall seed. So, that the point being, it's just hard to win, man. It's hard to get out there. Arkansas is a national seed and lost at home. Oklahoma State lost at home. So, Florida State getting to this point, I don't want the casual fan, and most of you guys are, we get it, to not appreciate how hard how it's never been harder to get out to Omaha than it is now. This team has accomplished something great no matter what happens. But now, yes, you know, they've got a 12.5% chance to win. That's 1 out of 8. That they've got, I think that's right. Maybe my mouth's off. I think that's 12.5%. But somebody's got to win it. And the key to the whole deal, Aslan, as we know, is you got to win your first two. You just got to. Yeah. So hopefully for Florida State's sake, we don't know. We're recording this in the evening. Evansville pulled the stunner of all time, and that's who Florida State is playing in the first game in Omaha. It's probably going to be Tennessee, which if it was Evansville, you might think about starting Dorsey, and then you can save Arnold for, you hope, a second game. Maybe you think about that. But you're going to be pitching. You've got to pitch Jamie Arnold in the first game.
No matter who the opponent is.
Okay. Probably. Okay. Almost certainly. Because the only way you're getting to the championship series, you've got to win the first two games. Yeah. And you can't win the second game. You can't win the game in the winner's bracket until you get to the winner's bracket. I don't think you get to the winner's bracket if Jamie Arnold isn't pitching against Tennessee or Evansville or whatever. You don't want to save Jamie Arnold for an elimination game. Because if you lose the first game, I just think the way this team is constructed with the limited options pitching-wise, you're not going to storm back and win, what would that be, 4 in a row
right,
to get to the champion? You're just not going to do that. Jamie's would only be able to pitch once probably in that stretch. So, okay, he staves off elimination for an extra day, but you're not winning. You got to win the first game. This program has not won two games in a row, the first two games out there, in 40 years. If they can do it, then you really start to believe that this thing is different. But either way, this program is back, man. It's really cool that it's back. It's back. You've got I don't think I'm being hyperbolic, man. I think you might have, and I've said this before, you might just have the best baseball coach in the country. To win at Notre Dame the way he did, to almost beat Mississippi State in a super there, to then beat Tennessee in a super there to get to Omaha, at Notre Dame, and then, yes, it's Florida State, but we all saw what the Florida State program he took over. And then a year and a half after he's taken this job, or two, whatever it's been, 2 years, he's in Omaha again?
Yeah.
Come on, man. This guy is the truth. He is the real deal. I don't know why they don't do this in baseball anymore. I would think he'd be somebody that Major League Baseball would be interested
hey,
in.
Hey, don't put any ideas out there, Corey.
But
hey,
they don't do that anymore, so we got nothing to worry about. They only promote from within. You've got a guy that you think will be here for the long haul. He's relatively young. He's early 50s. He can coach another decade and a half if he wants. And I think he might be the best coach in the country. Like, he doesn't have the best program in the country right now, and he doesn't have the pedigree of an O'Sullivan or Corbin or other guys that won national titles. But, man, he is awesome.
Yeah.
The proof is what – they're 47-15, Aslan.
I know.
They've won 47 games. Last year they went 2-22 during one stretch. Just and the beauty is because of this season, because of the crowd – because of the atmosphere and the big names and everything that was on stage for all these younger high school players to see, and more importantly, kids from other colleges to see, well, that portal is going to be fun too.
Yeah.
That portal is going to be a lot of fun when the season ends. Are we almost done? I got to pee.
I just want to say thanks for nothing, Clemson. Bums.
Oh, did they lose?
They lost.
Didn't I thought they hit a go? I thought they were ahead in the last inning.
No, they might have pulled ahead, but then the Gators hit a double to the gap. And
oh, that's too bad. Won. Too bad too, because that Clemson center fielder made one of the all-time great catches.
Gosh.
With the stakes that were there
absolutely,
for him to run up a hill and Willie Mays it in the fence,
yeah,
is one of the best catches you'll ever see. And then they lost it anyway because they're Clemson. And of course,
no one's gonna remember.
I don't say this lightly. Florida's going to go ahead and win the whole thing.
Oh,
and I will
it.
Say this. I do say this. People listen to me complain about them being in the tournament a week and a half ago or whatever it is. I stand by that. I still believe it's ridiculous they got into the tournament. But because they're this team, like, they're really good. They have supreme talent. They have great talent. And they didn't earn their way into the tournament, in my opinion.
Right.
They didn't deserve a spot in the tournament. But, yes, once they got in, clearly, as you can see, they're one of the most talented teams in the country. They can beat anyone. The problem is I didn't think they deserved to get in. just like I didn't think Alabama deserved to get in the football tournament. I think you need to earn it. But yeah, you get a chance. You give them a chance, and now they're in Omaha with Florida State and Caglione. Oh, is it Caglione or Caglione?
Caglione.
Best college baseball player that's ever lived. Unbelievable.
He's ridiculous,
It's crazy, and it's not just that he hits a bunch of home runs and throws 97. He struck out like 23 times this year. He's got like 12 more home runs than he does strikeouts. So it's not just he's Pete Incaviglia and he hits 40 home runs but strikes out 80 times. He's a contact hitter that just happens to make hard contact all the time and hit the ball over the fence a lot. And he throws 97. So, good for you, O'Sullivan. So proud. So proud of those guys. Everybody counted them out. Those passionate Gators, man. Those upstart Gators proving everybody wrong. With a bunch of first-round picks.
For whatever it's worth, ever since they've gone from Rosenblatt to TD Ameritrade, only two teams have lost 20 or more games and won the national title. So, okay. And there's only been four in the last 20 years. And they've lost 28 times. And they got run ruled, what, twice?
Yeah, by Florida State.
By Florida State?
Yeah, they were horrible in the midweek, but you don't have to play a lot of midweek games in Omaha.
Yeah, and they're on the other side of the bracket, if anybody's wondering, by the way. And we don't have start times.
How about that? Florida State and Florida for the national championship. Holy moly.
I would have taken them in a regional. I want them in a regional. I would have been fine with it. Not as excited.
Not
as excited.
Maybe that's what Florida State – But that's what Florida State needs, man. Just like the Red Sox,
yes.
They needed to get down 3-0 to the Yankees and then come back and win. That was what completely turned the fortunes of that franchise around. It had to come against the Yankees. So maybe Florida State, it has to come against Florida.
Lose the first game of the championship series.
Yep, and be down 5-1 in the sixth of the second game.
Yeah.
That's what has to happen to finally exorcise all those demons.
All right. Well, I think Corey and I might both be there. Corey's probably going to be there. We'll see if I'll.
No,
be there
I'm not going to be there.
What?
I'm not going to be there the first week. Ira's going. If they make a run, I'll be out there for the second week, so Ira doesn't have to be out there for 2 weeks by himself. But I'm not going. Brady's got a tournament. I went the last time, so it's Ira's turn. And, it's a long drive.
Am I going?
I don't know. What am I, your boss? I don't know if you're going or not. Ira can hold an iPhone. Hey, I want to tell this story real quick.
So we started this a little bit later than we intended to, which is good because we actually got the result of the Clemson game, at least out of the way.
People listening to this have – by the way, Corner Pocket's awesome. Go visit.
Let's give a little more love. A little more love. Corn Pocket Bar and Grill, cptallybar.com, the website, 2475 Appalachian Parkway. Go grab a burger, high-end, high-quality, half-pound, all-black Angus beef burger, side dish of your choice, only $8.99. What a great way to start the week. The Noles head to Omaha for that lunch special, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Corner Pocket Bar and Grill.
Corey. And if you're not going to Omaha, that'd be a good place to watch the Noles, a really good place to watch the Noles. So anyway, I'm in Biloxi at a casino. I'm playing video poker. I think most of you guys have played video poker. I'm literally just, you're there, you're hanging out with your buddies, you're drinking. It's cheap beer, free beer, although I'm not drinking beer. Anyway, so I'm playing, and I'm not even, I've had one drink, so this has just started. I just got to Biloxi. We're playing video poker, and I put $100 in. I'm playing $3 bets, so not the lightest, but not the heaviest either. Jacks are better. I know this is, some people don't know what I'm talking about, but most of you do that if you've been in a casino. Anyway, I lose probably Aslan, I would guess, literally like 15 out of 17. Like, and that's hard to do when jacks are better. All you're trying to do is get a pair, and you at least make your money back. I literally lost like 15 out of 17 hands, so I went from $100 to $20 with $3 bets. So I knew we had to record the show. I only had $20 left. I tell my buddy, I'm like, all right, I got to go head up. Let me go. I'm gonna bet this last $20. I'm going to leave. And so the max you could bet is $10. And I switched the game up to something called double bonus poker. I just switched the game up, and I literally hit deal. That's how I max bet it at $2. So five times that's $10 bet. I max bet it, and I get dealt 2-2-2-2 ace. Which paid me $1,600.
Let's go!
On a $10 bet. And then I had to wait 45 minutes for the attendant to come take my tax information, my social security number, go back and get the cash, take the state taxes portion of it out.
Ooh.
It literally took her like four, it was like a 40-minute ordeal. The music played for 10 minutes for 10 minutes, and then she finally came back because I was like, hey, I was telling the bartender, I'm like, I kind of got to go, man. And my buddies were like, well, you're staying right here, man, because she's coming back with $1,600. You don't need – I'm like, I know. I wish she'd hurry up. Yeah. And then, yeah, so I won $1,600 on a $10 bet, and that never happens to me. I've won some nice things at a horse track before.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never won anything like that at a casino. I never hit the slots. I never win at blackjack ever because I'm convinced – There's some ruse they're running us where the dealer always hits 21. I hate blackjack, but I won $1,600 on a $10 bet. And only because I had this podcast to come up and record. Otherwise, I would have never made that $10 bet.
Thank all the people out there, Corey.
Yep. Thank you guys for being such big fans that I had to come up, buzzed, and record a podcast on a Sunday evening for you folks. You guys are the best.
What's up, everybody? It's a Wake Up War Chant presented by Vitamin Energy. It's also maybe a breakout video on YouTube, everybody. All you recruitniks, you obsessive, put it in my veins. Need more recruiting. Michael Langston's here to set the stage, everybody. Again, use the promo code FSU1. I think that gets you 2 months of premium access for only $1. Michael Langston here. My Twitter feed is still going nuts. I imagine Matt is over at campus right now. I mean, it's what a nonstop weekend for you guys.
Oh, yeah. Nonstop. Started it at around 9 a.m., ended probably around 6:30 p.m., something like that. A lot of stuff going on, official visitors, 9 of them. And then you had the elite camp with probably around 55 to 60 talent, mostly underclassmen, 2026 kids, mostly 2026, but a lot of really premier talent, you know, that I think it was FSU knew, like, they're probably going to do another one in July. So the 2025 class, they can get in for July. And then this one, they really hammered down on the underclassmen. But yeah, pretty busy day.
All right, let's get to it. Let's go to the OVs, as the kids like to say, Michael. Official visits. You know, for as much grief as one of the coaches gets on the other side of the football, one of the dudes on the offensive side of the football continues to bring in elite guys and puts together a really good segment. Max Buchanan, 6'4". And a half-ish, 279-pound offensive lineman from Seminole, Sanford, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
How's that one coming along, big dog?
Looking good. I think they nailed everything they wanted. A lot of this visit was really about Max's, one, his family being there, but two, just Max interacting with a lot of the players. I felt like they nailed that pretty hard as far as just the bonds around the players and the comfort and seeing what the locker room's like, or just what these guys are like outside of football. And I think they really heavily connected. It was already a really good relationship with Alex Atkins. That was always there. Same thing with Mike Dorvell, with Max. I think it was really just getting a feel for the inside of the program, being there, seeing the daily things they do, sitting in team meetings, you know, player, you know, council, where you get a chance to really pick these guys' brains. And I think they nailed it, you know, pretty strongly. You know, with Max, I feel pretty good about, you know, where FSU sits in that recruitment.
All right, moving along then for the Noles. Obviously, more than just one dude out there on official visit. How about the young man Clardy, Ladarian Clardy?
Yeah,
defensive back. Obviously, Patrick Surtain knows what he's doing over there. Just how vital was it to get him on campus? What kind of impression do you think Florida State was able to make on him?
I mean, it was vital because he was one of the, out of all the guys, he was one of the most recent offers they made. Kid immediately set up an official visit, so you could tell, like, okay, he's pretty serious about FSU. He loves him. He's from Pensacola, Florida. Shout out Jonathan Daniels and Darius Washington, both from that area. So that certainly helped the comfort factor. And then, two, just this one's really sped up a lot. With FSU just being there. And I think people can, you know, watch the interview we did with him. I mean, he was just smiling from ear to ear the whole time. They really knocked it out of the park. And I think a lot of it was the comfort and connection that he had with those players, hanging out with, you know, a lot of those DBs like Conrad Hussey, all the newcomers that came in. He really just bonded from the start. They took him in right in, and now FSU sitting in a pretty strong spot. I know on threes, Chad Simmons and Steve Wilfong both put in a pick today for FSU. I would agree with that pick. I've been out there all day, so I hadn't had a chance to make a pick, but I'm pretty confident I will also follow suit with a pick in there based on – I told Matt when I leaned there to Matt, I was like, yeah, that one looks pretty good for FSU there. So, you know, certainly a top DB. His nickname is Squirrel, by the way, Aslan. That's what most people call him. That's kind of his nickname. And I could tell just what I got from my FSU intel. This was a guy that was very vital that they wanted. So I knew there was going to be a strong push. I put up there late Saturday night, did a few nuggets of what I'm hearing. And it was really positive about the impact that this visit has made. And I think now they're sitting in the pole position and looking really good. Mississippi State is another team he mentioned that, you know, he would likely visit. We'll see if he takes any more visits. I'm not sure if that's set in stone, but we'll see where it goes from there. But I think they're sitting pretty good.
6'1", 170. Is he still projecting to you as a safety, do you think, at the next level?
Yeah, I think he's a safety that can also play corner if you want him to, but. Certainly seems to be a safety more than anything when I watch his game, but just a terrific talent that they really fell in love with and they watched their film. And really, ever since he checked off all the boxes on the film study, I think FSU has been pushing really hard for this class. And the safety position is the one that they want to, I think, load up on. They want to get two or three guys in there. So I think it was a big deal, you know, putting their best foot forward and really making a strong impression and putting themselves in a good spot with Ladarian.
I can't believe we're gonna talk about this guy. We're gonna talk about Zion Grady. He's from Alabama. It looks like he's at Enterprise High School now. I thought he was over at Charles Henderson out there in Troy. Maybe he transferred, but he decommitted. That's news to me. But you know me, Michael. When it comes to Alabama dudes, Mississippi dudes. Like you got to wake me up on signing day, but that 6'4", 225 pound edge, he's worth it, man. He's worth the shot. How much of an impact do you think Florida State was able to make on this weekend official?
Yeah, coming into the visit, Steve Wilfong had said, like FSU, he felt like FSU was a favorite. And checking with my guys, even after this visit, they kind of felt a similar, you know, feeling and vibe that, you know, FSU was, you know, in the best position. You mentioned development a lot. That's a big part of his recruitment. We know JP and that defensive line staff do a phenomenal job. That's something FSU excels at. You know, Zion even said, like, dude, they're putting two or three guys in the league like every year. So it's like, you know, they have no problem with what they're doing. Talked about his comfort level, feeling at home there. That's different. I asked him what was kind of different about FSU, and he mentioned that the comfort level was just really different when he's there. Had a big smile when he talked about Norvell. So there's such a strong connection, not just with JP, but also, you know, Norvell. And, you know, you still have to go through the rest of the process. I think Ohio State is a team that I'm kind of eyeing to see, you know, how he feels after that one, if he takes an official there. But I know he's officially visited Miami. But, you know, for me, I look at Ohio State when you see what they do with defensive linemen. That's still a team you got to keep notice. But I think FSU has done the best job from the start recruiting this kid and showing, you know, what their product is and what they do. And I think it's just connected in a strong way with him. I think really if they land this kid, Aslan, it's going to be a lot of what they've done in development in the last two or three years, because this kid's really, really high on that. And this weekend he got a chance to just feel the brotherhood of what FSU is, since he hasn't experienced that totally. But those are some things that he really, you know, harped on and connected with throughout the visit.
Well, shoot, Michael, much like Link Jarrett's got me believing in the boys in baseball, you got me believing the Florida State's got a real shot, this Zion Grady kid. And speaking of baseball in Omaha, yeah, how about Millard South product Chase Lofton? Florida State going into the Cornhusker State, trying to pull some top-end talent, 6'5½", 213-pound tight end. Good-looking young man there. Offers on the RPM, or rather, that is predictions. Old Big 8, Big 12 country. Now a lot of SEC programs. You see Missouri, see Oklahoma on there. Just how legitimate, how real is a pursuit for Florida State and Chase Lofton?
I think it's very real. His brother, I think he said, plays at Kansas State. He obviously lives in Nebraska, so you know they're certainly in the picture. But he kind of gave some signs like stuff like, hey, my brother hardly ever goes home, so it's like playing at home is not as important as getting the right fit. So you could tell he's kind of fading away from that, where it's not as big a deal. I do think FSU is the leader now for Chase Lofton. I think they're leading. I think they're in a great spot. Our Steve Wilfong from Mon3 also reported that he felt FSU was the leader. So that's certainly the one for that one. This weekend, Aslan, I wasn't really focused so much on, what he saw, but what mom saw, what the family saw, because when you're going that far away from Nebraska to Tallahassee, Florida, I think that was the real key for me. And I think they nailed it with the family. Family loved it. There was a connection where they felt like, okay, we're comfortable if he went here. If he went here, we could check off on that and sell off on that and say, hey, we feel good here. But we'll see what happens for the rest of the official visits. It does seem like he mentioned that he wants to decide. I think he said either June or early July. So it feels like that one's coming soon. And I know from an FSU side perspective, I do think they feel good about, really solid about how things developed throughout the weekend with Chase and their recruitment of him. So, some pretty good news already for FSU from these official visits.
All right. The Noles already got Cromanhawk in the fold. What about Croma? What about our guy Big O, Osmane? What do we think about that one, Michael?
I'll be honest. I was shocked how much he liked it and how much I was hearing good things about the visit, because I had already, FSU started fading away. It didn't feel like, hey, this is going to happen. I know the RPM doesn't back that up, but they have been fading away in this recruitment. They've had a hard time getting him on campus. They finally got him there this weekend. And he brought the most family I've ever seen on an official visit. Tons of family and friends that were with him. And I've heard some good, positive stuff of FSU is actually a real factor. I do think Georgia, probably the biggest competition, but I think Auburn is also in there. But I think FSU, from a playing style fit point of view, is the best fit of just his game, because he's really good as a receiver. We know he's a powerful runner, and certainly he's got a lot of speed. But I think FSU really made a good sizable jump this weekend. I'm not going to call them for sure leader, but I think now, before this, I was like, hey, they're fading away. It's probably not going to happen, probably a long shot. But after this visit, I would say now they're back strongly in the mix, into the picture. So they're going to be a heavy player for Usman and the rest of the way. And he plans to come back for another game or something that effect. And then just did an unbelievable job, not just showing him the fit, but also, their VR program that really jumped out to him, just strength and conditioning stuff they do with storms and a lot of different factors that, maybe not people think about on a visit that really just connected with him, but just also the feeling he gets when he's around the staff is, as Usman said, it's different when he's here and the feeling he gets. So we'll see if they can keep the momentum going. I'm not going to chalk up like, hey, they're strongly going to, pull it out. I'm going to wait a week or so. I want to see how he feels, if that feeling is still there, for me to say, hey, they're one of the top schools and favorites. But they made a major push and major strides this weekend with Usman. There's no doubt.
Number 5 running back, according to us here at On3 Consensus, number 4 back in the class of 25, 6 foot, half inch, 215 pounds. Michael, before we let you go, first off, hit the thumbs up, everybody. But everyone's going to hear, oh, wow, like they're in the lead for all these guys. Like when the commitment's going to start coming. We may be able to get that on a different thing, but I kind of want you maybe to touch on a little bit about the fact that I know there's still a long way to go, but, all you can do is get these kids on campus, have them come for an official visit, and then after that, have them say that you're in the lead. I guess after that, it's anybody's game. So it pretty seems like they've done all they kind of could of this coaching staff this weekend.
Yeah, I think decisions are coming. I think probably two or three of these guys are going to be in this class. I would say that officially visit this weekend. It could be more, but that's what I have right now. I think the commits will come. But these kids, very rarely does a kid visit in June or June and just say, hey, I'm committed right now. You know, but I do think there's two or three in there that I do feel, you know, will likely be a part of this class based on what I have. But I think people need to understand, like, it's not about the moment now. It's about what you get when they actually make that decision. So I definitely think they've positioned themselves and they got stuff done of you needed to hear the stuff about Clarity. You needed to hear the stuff about Grady. You need to hear stuff about Max and Usman and all these guys of them making a surge for a lot of these guys. You know, they needed to do that to even position themselves to pull it off since some of them still have visits left. But I think overall, a very productive and positive weekend based on the intel we already have from this official visit weekend. But I know people are going to want commits. They're like, hey, they got four. They want them now. But it's like decisions are going to come, guys. It just doesn't happen like right on that weekend.
Yeah, this June month, everyone's going and getting all their visits in.
Yeah,
July, yeah. They'll take some time off and figure it all out. So we wait until then. Go to warchant.com, premium recruiting board. Again, FSU won two months, $1, everybody. Get all the information you want, or go check our Warchant Twitter page, which just, good Lord, man, just clips galore of dudes in elite camps.
Yeah.
Class of 26, all these future Noles we certainly hope down the line. Certainly hope to talk to you down the line once again, Michael Langston. Thanks for taking time out, buddy.
You got it.
All right, and that's a wrap for us today. Thanks again to Michael for hopping on here, and for Corey. I'm Aslan. Thanks for listening. Two more shows this week, probably. I don't know. Maybe I'm traveling. Still don't know if I'm going to Omaha or not. Everybody go to warchant.com and post on the Tribal Council. Send Aslan to Omaha, please. We'll catch up with you folks later. Jeff Cameron Show, 1 to 3 o'clock. Check it out, everybody. Hit the thumbs up on the way out if you're listening to us on YouTube. 5-star rating and review. Certainly would appreciate it. Thanks again for listening to Wake Up Warchant, presented by Vitamin Energy.
What do Devontae Adams, George Kittle, Justin Jefferson, Deebo Samuel, and Amon-Ra St. Brown all have in common? Well, besides being some of the most reliable hands in the game of football, they're also the stars of the new Netflix series Receiver. From the same team that brought you the show Quarterback, Receiver takes you deep inside the huddles, locker rooms, and personal lives of five of the best pass catchers and playmakers in the NFL. Catch Receiver on July 10th, only on Netflix.